Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we take a look at your personal computer. We'll take a look at privacy and the services that we use. How secure are those services? Lots of questions out there. Google has a privacy policy that's kind of come under some questions. We'll talk about that with Peter Green today of Infostar.com. He's here to answer your questions as we visit with him, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. How much do you think about internet privacy? Does a site or services policies impact whether you use it or not? That's an interesting question. We'll talk about that. Pete, what do you think?
Well, the first take on it is there's, you know, a lot of discussion about it on the airwaves. You know, it was a news item. Google's very large presence online. It's basically part of the on-ramp that people use to get on the super information highway and get to where they want to be.
And their policy changed, I think, March 1st.
Correct. Hmm. And I will have links to that as part of the top 10. I don't have it posted yet, but it'll be, you know, sometime later today or early this evening. I got some technical difficulties. Occasionally mm-hmm. that happens. But what's interesting is that people use Google on a regular basis. It's grown in its popularity since day one. Alta Vista used to be a big one. Ask.com, Yahoo Search. Microsoft tried to make Bing popular, and it might very well be, you know, popular, but Google basically rules. And they've developed other applications, the Google Toolbar, which becomes an add-in to any browser. They developed their own browser, Chrome. They have their own advertising application, AdSense, that advertisers can participate in. They have Google Earth. They have Google Docs, people sharing docs. They have a lot of applications, Google Plus,
yeah,
you know, taking on Facebook.
There.
So they have all these products and services. How do they get paid?
Yeah.
How do they get paid? You know, ask yourself that question if you've never thought of it. How do they make their money? Well, when you do a search, advertisers buy into that search by being brought up, you know, based on what you're looking for. Google is serving up ads or potential links that you might be interested in. And as you browse the web, so whether or not you're logged into Internet Explorer or Firefox or Chrome or Opera or whatever you're using, Safari, whatever you're using, and you're using it through the Google search experience, they've set their advertising engines to leverage what you're searching on and who you are and where mm-hmm. you go. And they get compensated for that.
Yeah. So if I look up something relating to golf, chances are there are going to be a whole bunch of ads that are going to come my way on golf clubs, golf balls, golf shoes.
Sure. And the more you do that, the more they try to show you as related to what sites you might be visiting and what tastes you have mm-hmm. online in terms of searching. So they're compensated by that, and that's how they make their revenue. And because a lot of people use it, they generate a significant amount of money, and they have an archive of previous policies, and they decided, hey, across the board, we're trying to make this easier. But now factor in the next thing that a lot of people don't realize, which is Google owns the Android operating system platform. They own Motorola. So they're the maker of smartphones. And they've bought into a lot of patents that play into these devices. And more people are buying smartphones, and they're browsing through these smartphones. And some of the Android apps are not necessarily tied down with security or privacy. Stopgaps. So things like photos could potentially be susceptible if a memory card was plugged into a smartphone, which a lot of these smartphones expand by adding memory cards, where photos could potentially be uploaded without your knowledge. So that's one potential area of a security or a hole or a flaw, whatever you want to call it. And what's another thing is that it's not domestic. It's not localized to our country. The internet is a global network. And Google even states that the information that you may have in your accounts may be stored in servers, their systems, in other countries. It's not just here in the U.S. So it's really a global issue. And now we have these smart devices. So there's a lot of things that come into play. But if you choose not to participate through Google, then you can ignore their policy changes. Other options are to browse anonymously and not share any of your information. And there are I haven't checked
somebody
them out.
Somebody would say, how do you do that?
I believe in Firefox, there is a way to browse anonymously. I'm not sure if that comes into play with Internet Explorer or Google. Make sure you don't log into your account. Google has Gmail account. I even left that out. I didn't even mention that, a lot of people use Gmail accounts. I use one specifically just for my iPhone, which is nice.
Yeah.
But again, free. But how do they get paid for it? Yeah. If you choose not to participate, then don't use Google. But again, then what are your options and what are their privacy policies? So there's no consistency across the board for not only the services that people use for searching, but also for the devices and the operating systems that are out there and what their policies are. It's whatever the company that owns it sets it.
Mike in Oconomowoc has a comment or question. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Hi. And Peter. First of all, I don't want a phone that's smarter than me, okay? That's
number
one. Secondly, this latest move by Google just solidifies the fact that I am so glad Mozilla has all these add-ons where you can surf and go to various websites and not have your actions tracked. But there's a lot of ways to do it. Anonymously is one of them, and it requires a really good server, a good internet connection. But can you expound any on the various add-ons that you're familiar with Mozilla as far as just remaining anonymous without going to an anonymous type of an add-on? You know, like how to protect, how to keep the advertisements off your web browser, how to keep the tracking down, and just completely remain anonymous and never sign into Google. Unless you have Gmail, never sign in because that's one way they do find out who you are. Right, gentlemen?
Yep. Yeah. Well, one is, turning on your pop-up blocker. Another one is cleaning your history, cleaning the cookies that are on your system, making sure those are, cleaned on a regular basis. The inconvenience of that is the fact that if you're visiting sites such as, for doing financial and online banking, if you've got, eBay, others, Facebook, other services that you're using, they use those cookies to make it easier for you to get back in. So there's a trade-off in terms of, your user experience being seamless versus being a little bit more of a burden. And, the user has to make a decision at some point in time, how they want that experience to be. So... Yeah. There's a trade-off. If you want the easy way, you let the cookies get deposited and, on a regular basis, you clear them out. It's just a matter of how often do you want to clear them out because every time you clear them, you have to redo the information when you're doing the login.
Yeah. Bruce in Chillett, I believe. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I am asking about a security warning that I get every time I visit a website. It says, do you want to view only the web page content that was delivered securely? And then I have to click yes or no every time I change. I'm looking at my library card. If I go from my checked out items to my requests on hold, I've got to click yes or no. Again, do you know how to get rid of that?
Well, it becomes a matter of personal preference, but there's a security, depending upon what you're using and where it's found. If you're using Internet Explorer, you look under, I believe it's Tools and then Internet Options.
Okay.
There's a security tab, and if you want it to be less of a burden for having those questions, then you lower the security.
All right.
So it's warning you that this is a page you might want to just pay attention to. If you think that that page could be, you know, something you don't want to deal with anymore, you lower the security warning, and then it'll just pass it through.
All right.
Thanks very much for calling.
You know, Microsoft, by default, when it sets up the Windows 7, I'm not sure if this was with Vista, but I know because Vista is really just an abomination. But Windows 7, when it's set up as a default, in the user settings, it will ask you, and I'm sure a lot of people have this, it will ask you anytime you run an application if you want to approve of it. And the way you can eliminate that question, and again, it's a security setting. And again, it depends on personal preferences. If you like that question, then you just leave it the way it is. But you can go into the user settings and simply change the control. There's an option in there to change the control down to basically not bother you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Nora in Price County. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm so glad you're on. I have a weird question. I have Skype, and I pay something like $11 a month so I can call all over the world. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But when I go and, like, check online, you know, when I'm typing or whatever, or I put away, what happens is, like, three or four times now, when I've been in doing the dishes or in the other room or something, I hear, yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo. And I'll come and my screen is all covered. You know, I have, like, you know, on my screen open, you know, the main screen or whatever. And then I'll hear the yoo-hoo. I'll say, where are you? They say, and they'll say, Skype. So then I'll quick switch over to Skype, and they can see right into my house. And I don't know what I'm doing or how that happened.
No.
So are you talking about someone that you don't know?
No.
Okay.
I'm very private. I don't go to Google.
Oh, okay. So what you're doing is you're leaving your system online. And what people are doing is they're noticing you're online, and then they're just getting your attention.
So they can actually see into my house.
Well, if you have your webcam enabled, you know, they're basically ringing you. They're trying to, you know, you're online, they're online, and you know it's a two-way street unless you shut off your video.
Okay, but that's the other thing is when I bring up my screen,
yep.
And I bring up the Skype.
Yep.
And I put online. I'm really not. I'm, like, doing stuff around the house.
Okay. So what you need to do, you could go into Skype and change the preferences so that it doesn't start when your computer starts up.
Uh-huh.
Or so you can look for that in Skype.
I know where it is.
Okay. All right. Then the other option is you could are you using Windows or Apple?
Yeah, I just got the Windows 7.
Okay. You could go into the MS config, but if you know where the preferences are, just what you need
there.
To do is go there, change the setting, and then reboot your computer, and then Skype won't be turned on until you use it. And when you exit out of Skype, then basically you'll be offline.
Okay, just one more quick question. I hate to take all your time, but
that's okay.
Does it make a difference if I put it online, away, do not disturb, or invisible, or offline?
Well, do not disturb would tell me that you're online, but don't bother me.
Oh, you know. Okay, but you couldn't see in. I mean, you
right. Yeah. Right.
Well, see, because I do get a lot of calls from all over,
yeah.
You know, and uh-huh. So I kind of like, you know, and I only have like 10 people.
Okay.
So I tell them, you know, pay no attention to that red.
Yep.
But then I thought, well, maybe it's just best I leave it on the, online. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I really enjoy this.
You know, the easiest program. Thing to do would be to play with the settings and
uh-huh.
then just, you know, get one of your, you know, if it's a relative or a friend and, you know, just timing-wise, communicate with them and then say, hey, I want to try something and say in the next 5 minutes I'm going to put this on, you know, this setting on and then tell me what it does on your end and then
okay.
change it and then call them back.
Right.
What I do is I have two computers, and what amazed me is I used a service called Log Me In, which is a remote control.
Uh-huh.
And just for the heck of it, I use it for logging into one of my servers, but I also have a Mac and a Windows machine.
Uh-huh.
So I had the Mac was sleeping, and
uh-huh.
it had Log Me In set up to remotely access it. So I logged into my account, and I just said, for the heck of it, let's see what it does if I try to wake it up. And when I clicked on that wake up button, I actually heard a click behind me waking the machine up. It was like turning on a light switch, which
wow.
to me is very impressive.
Yeah.
Because that's traveling from my computer, one computer over the internet to a service that's on a server somewhere, who knows where.
10,000 miles
away. And clicking a button and then hearing it right behind me waking my computer up. So there's a lot of amazing things that are going on.
You know, it took me a month to get off Google, and this was like a few years ago. I thought, what am I doing? You know, it's not that I have anything to hide. I don't. I just don't like, you know, and I keep mine pretty strict so I don't get a lot of ads and all that.
Is she being charged for all that time? Are you?
No. It's $11 a month solid.
Okay.
And I can call Argentina, Germany, Colombia, I mean, all over.
Yeah. I think the way she's using it is probably you're calling not only cell phones but landlines.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there is some part of it's free, and Microsoft now owns that. And I don't know how the lay of the land has changed. But there are some things that you can do for free with Skype. But in order to leverage or having the ability to call all these different numbers and places, then there are some fees attached to it.
I live in a small place up, and we have only one phone company, and it costs 11 cents a minute to call anywhere around the United States. So before I only had free Skype,
mm-hmm.
but I thought, you know, for 11.15, that's worth it. But just recently this thing has happened to me, and I couldn't figure it out.
Well, now you have it, Nora. Thank you so much for calling.
I
appreciate it. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green of Infostar of Madison, our guest, as we talk computers with him and privacy and those services that we use. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. Dick in Cross Plains, let's give you a chance now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Right. Hi there, fellas. Like 2 days ago, I was using Google Earth, and I thought, gee, maybe I'll look under help and see if there are updates. And in fact, there were. So I installed the new Google Earth 6.2. It was not listed as a beta, as I recall. When I started up, it appeared to install correctly. There weren't any warnings or anything. When I started up, all my placemarks are there. It goes right to my home point and everything. You can see all the little stick pins all over. But there's no imagery underneath it. There's no Earth.
They lost the Earth.
Which?
And I've reinstalled it a couple of times. I've cold booted the computer a few times over the last couple of days and all mm-hmm. sorts of stuff. And I tried it again just before your program started, and I still have no imagery, just all my
pins.
Pins, yeah.
Well, which operating system are you using?
Windows XP.
Windows XP.
I did not see any. I've Googled I've gone back to Google Earth Help, and I've been also to just Google general search, and don't see any reference to this problem. And I haven't seen anything that says it won't work except on Windows 7. So,
do you know if you have a restore point to go back to? Have you tried that?
I have not tried that. No.
Okay. What I, would...
I have tried installing older versions, and it keeps saying you can't do this. Use the new one.
Well,
go back to the restore point.
What I would do is I would look at the under accessories and system tools, the system restore, and see if you can go back to a restore point to the prior install.
Okay.
Because I think what's happened is a number of things. XP has probably been out of circulation as far as Microsoft is concerned for a couple of years, even though they still kind of feed us some mini updates. It's really been out of the loop.
I got a message from them the other day. I can't remember exactly how, to the effect that there aren't going to be any more mini updates
either. Right. So as related to that, what may be happening with what your experience is, it's experiencing is that the Google Earth application is a pretty massive application, I mean, graphic-wise. And there might be some code in there that might be conflicting with your video driver that's for older hardware and for XP. And underneath, there might be some browser hooks because it does kind of tie in with being able to browse. That there might be just some incompatibilities that you're not seeing but you're experiencing, and that there's no way to, you know, figure that out other than just going back to a prior version.
Yeah.
One thing that I just thought of that I have not tried is across the bar up there on Google Earth, there's a place where you click and it goes to Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not checked to see if there's any imagery under Google Maps. So I guess I'll give that a try.
Yeah, give that a try.
Yeah, you might try it, but based on what you're saying is the application's not behaving correctly. So
yeah,
it may or may not work, but if it's not giving you the experience like you had before, the other thing you might want to weigh is look and see if you can find out what changes were made to the one that you're moving to and whether or not you're really missing out on much. Yeah. I know I've installed Google Earth recently on a system, and you know, I don't use it a lot, but it's when you're planning a trip to a different place, out of the country, it's pretty awesome checking things out.
There you go, Dick. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate
it. And it's free.
It. Yeah, it's free. Yeah.
See? It's, you know.
Well, Andrew in Boscobel said all of us need to switch to Bing or any other engine. This is crazy. I'm dumping my Android phone. This is not what I signed up for, and I'm so happy now that I never got involved with their cloud services. There's a great lesson for all of us in this. We should not become so dependent on one company because we lose the ability to take our business elsewhere. Google has been making plenty of money from us as search customers under the old policy. Please suggest other search engines that we can try out. So what other search engines?
Well, again, you know, you're going to have to look into their policy.
Their policies are going to be...
Yeah. And end user, you know, the other thing is like EULAs, end user license agreements, EULA. I was going to post a link about that too, because that's another issue. You know, when you go to install software, you know, when we talk about programs like CCleaner and Google Earth, you know, any program that you download and install, you've got an end user license agreement. What do you do? You can read it, but if you don't want to use it, then you cancel it and you say no. If you're going to use it, then you say yes. You know, it's either a yes or no answer.
Yeah.
So, you know, as related to other services out there, you know, Microsoft owns Bing. They have their policy. They're gonna drive you to, you know, their advertising model, you know, for who's buying into their services. Ask.com, Yahoo, they all have policies. So it goes back to who really is Big Brother. Well, we got a lot of Big Brothers.
Yeah.
We got Microsoft. We got Cisco, who really provides the networking behind the networks that are out there in a large way. HP, the computer manufacturer, which bought out Compaq and Dell and Google and Facebook and Apple. And I mean, look at Apple. Apple, what did they, what was it, 25 billion downloads they just celebrated from iTunes? You know, think about iTunes.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize this. iTunes is Apple's mall.
Yeah.
iTunes is Apple's online mall. If you shop with Apple, you're going through their mall. You're walking through their online door into their mall, and they collect money from that. So when you walk into a mall physically, there's no money collected until you buy something.
Yeah.
But Apple collects on everyone that walks through that mall door when they buy.
Yeah.
So if you're an application developer, you're giving up part of your money because you're in Apple's mall. If they're buying a video or a book, Apple is collecting on all of that.
Yeah.
How big is that big brother?
Yeah. Yeah,
and if you 25 if you're a vendor,
billion, and think of the how much would the average
and if you're Larry and if you're a vendor and you and you want to be in Apple's mall,
you
guess who sets
it.
The rules?
Yeah, Apple. You don't deal with
you
them.
Don't tell them how they tell you how.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Oh man, well John. Says whenever I log into a bank's website, I get the following advisory, apparently from McAfee. It says, the previous web page might require the following add-on. QuickTime Check Scriptable Object from Apple Computer Inc. Message also says, source is unidentified publisher. Is this a scam? I run Windows XP on a PC and never heard of a PC website requiring an update from Apple. The bank website seems safe and secure without the update. Should I continue to ignore it?
What I would do is relate to the bank website. Number one is I would ignore that, and I would also contact the bank and tell them, you know, what you're using. Both, you know, they're going to ask you the operating system, the software, the browser, and, you know, just communicate with them. And they may give you other instructions, or they may be thankful that you alerted them to that. But that's how I would handle that. It, you know, if there's any question is related to your banking site and your system, they're not necessarily compatible with every combination that people are using. And the only way they fix those things are when they're alerted by the users that tell them that. And that, to be honest with you, that's, you know, Microsoft's operating system is out there on so many different combinations of hardware and software that they don't they try to say it's certified. But that's only if the hardware or the software company goes through a certification process. And then if they make a little change or modification, they may not necessarily go through that certification process again. And it doesn't happen instantaneously. It may take weeks, months, several months before Microsoft actually says, you know what, it's okay. It works fine. But in the meantime, the people that are buying the products, the hardware and the software, they have no idea because it hadn't been certified yet. So then you have to accept it that we're going to approve it, but it's not really certified. So it's an ongoing game as related to that. So the more you can communicate with your financial services as to what your experience is like if you're having a problem, is they're going to get back to you and work with you to resolve that.
John in Burlington, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Great, thanks for calling.
All right, the question I have is on CCleaner, which I have downloaded onto Windows 7. I use the I brain farted everything here.
Registry cleaner or the...
No, the free space cleaner.
Okay.
What exactly does that do? I mean, is it
like easy cleaner or something? Yeah.
The free space cleaner, I typically do not use. The part that I use in the C cleaner is I clean out the cache, the history, the recently used items in Firefox, Internet Explorer. You can go in and you can modify the settings in there. They have checkboxes and stuff like that.
Right.
The free cleaner, the free space, I think that kind of wipes that clear. But I think there was a caution in there as to use it, being able to, you know, for me to use it or not. And I just have elected not to use that feature in their software. But I do use a registry cleaner quite a bit.
Yeah, I use that quite a bit too, and I mean, it works fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always just wondered what, because there's plenty of applications on there to use, but yeah. I just didn't know what that specifically does.
Well, what you can do is they actually have a great website, and I believe that whether or not you go to their website or you just do a general search, you can probably find out the more specifics on what exactly it does by just doing a search on it.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for calling.
You know, the one thing that I want to make sure that's clear, and with the last caller just kind of tunes me into that, even though I use a lot of these things, I'm not really the support for a lot of these products and services. And I do work with, you know, people, where I work and places I support and stuff like that. But I'm not the quote-unquote expert of, you know, CCleaner or of Internet Explorer or of Firefox. Yeah, I have a lot of experience with it. But, you know, the more detailed questions that you have, you really need to go back to the source, because those are the people that have created those applications.
Yeah, they know.
And they generally will know the answer. Now, I can tell you that some of the stuff that I've worked with recently, I would consider voodoo science. And after you get to a point where you'd say, hey, you know, enough of the voodoo science, I'm just going back to the way I was doing it before. This is too crazy.
We had a Facebook comment from Brian who said, as far as Google's new policies are concerned, they do have an incognito mode, just like Firefox, and there is also an app for both of them called AdBlock, which works pretty well.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it was good to hear. Tom in Wanakee, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. Peter.
Hi.
Say, some more on the Google question or the privacy. If I understand correctly, Google has Google Plus, I think you sign in for that, or if you have Gmail,
yep.
Or I think they also own YouTube now, so
yep.
You can sign in for that. If you don't sign into these things, is this all irrelevant? Except for, you know, I mean, there's been tracking of your IP, I guess, as far as surfing history and what have you, but
try turning.
If I don't have a Google account, then the privacy, I mean, it doesn't matter. So how does it affect me if I don't have any Google thing?
Try turning off your cookies when you're browsing and see how that experience is.
Try turning off the cookies.
Yeah, the cookies are items that are deposited on your hard drive.
Right.
That when you go back to a website,
sure.
They, you know, they're looking at what you've looked at and what you've experienced online, and then they're melding that with their technology.
Right.
To put things in front of you
according to your IP address.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
And that's under the cookies. You can just turn it off or.
Well, like I said,
if you turn it off, you got price.
You know, wait to see how many times you got to hit to, you know, load that page.
Oh yeah, right. But if you but using CCleaner and stuff like uh-huh. that, or clearing your history, does that clear your cookies then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you've got it set to do that. and you pull the trigger, yes.
Yeah, I do. I use CCleaner a lot, yep. You know, a couple times a week easily.
Yep.
So, okay, so all otherwise, right. If you don't have Google stuff or you log into their programs, it's not an issue.
Right.
Right.
And I've done it a long time ago. There used to be a site, I'm not sure if it still works, but it was anonymous.com or something where you could actually go to that site and then just continue to be online through them. And I'm not saying it works now. It could very well be shut off, but you would be online and browsing through them, and you're basically, your IP is meaningless because, you know, it's...
You're going through them.
You're going through another node.
Yeah, I use Tor, T-O-R. Tor Project? That's another one.
Okay.
That you go through them and whatever. And I had taken that off, but I downloaded it, but I haven't applied it yet. But I may use that. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Yep, and an interesting point is that we've mentioned IP. What is IP? Internet Protocol Address. It's an address that you're assigned. So when you log on to the internet, you're a node or a port, and you have a number. And typically that's been IP4. IP6 is the next level because we know we're running out of numbers.
Oh, man. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers, privacy, and the services that we use with our computers. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of Infostar.com. Great to have him along, and thank you for listening in. And I know Ryan in Madison's been waiting a while here, so let's go to Ryan. Thank you for waiting, Ryan. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Hi. I have just a bit of a commentary. I feel like a lot of conversation so far has been about, you know, kind of lambasting Google about this policy. And I think Google's been very fair about announcing the policy and allowing users to opt out. And we haven't really discussed that Google does let you turn off this policy. You don't have to install add-ons or delete a bunch of history or use different browsers or anything like that. You can just opt out. I've done it with my account. I've done it maybe about a week before the policy took place. Very happy with the level of information that Google has put out, all the instructions they put out. I really don't feel like they're sort of the big brother, the evil big brother that it, you know, this show has kind of made them out to be so far. And it's not really choosing, you know, Google as an evil big brother or Bing as an evil big brother. You know, at some point, these systems are complicated enough that they require a level of infrastructure that makes them sort of big. And I feel like to use the services, that size is sort of necessary, but that doesn't make it something that you should immediately distrust or be skeptical of. Really, they're a great company. I've been extremely happy with their services, and I mean, in terms of trust, I have no problems after doing a fair amount of research, participating in a number of different applications. I also wanted to just very quickly suggest that those who are unhappy with Google try a search called DuckDuckGo. It's a different competing search engine that's growing very rapidly. And if, you know, you're a little afraid of Yahoo or Bing or Google and these other sort of larger companies, for whatever reason, that's fine. Try the smaller service. I know there was a previous question about that. But, you know, to get back to the issue, you know, there's been a lot of talk about why you should distrust Google. And really, it seems like it's all just sort of foreboding and there's sort of imminent doom. But what are the downsides? What could Google do with their information, with the information they collect from you?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I wouldn't say we're really, you know, bashing them. We're just simply pointing out, you know, that if you want to take advantage of what they've created, you know, with all their products and services, they've got to get compensated. And I was talking to Larry before the show. People do have choices. And in fact, if you go to Google, if you do a search on their privacy policy, you know, whether you use Google or whatever search engine, if you read it in one area, they talk about transparency and choice, and they talk about, you know, that they want to be clear on their goal about what information they collect and that you can make meaningful choices. And they give you hyperlinks to the review and control of the information that's in your accounts, the ability to view and edit your ad preferences, to edit your profile, to control the information you share, and take information out of the variety of services. But at the same time, they're just making you aware that they are doing all these things. You can edit them, but how many people actually do take the time to look at, review, and edit, and make sure that, you know, all of their stuff is, if you want to, not exposed and so forth. So,
well, for me, really, I didn't have to review much of anything. Google sort of said, you know, we assume you're of this age based on your viewing habits, and we assume this.
Right.
You know, do you want us to collect information or not?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't what level of information do you want to collect. I just
right.
said, no, I don't want you to collect it,
mm-hmm.
and I just turned it straight off. The actual changes, which I'm surprised haven't really been discussed, are more about taking that same information that's collected on through a Google search and made available through other applications.
Right.
So that, you know, it's not really about that they're going to start collecting so much more from you. It's about using the information they already have in a different manner. I don't really feel like it's much more intrusive. You know, Facebook, for example, changes their privacy policy all the time, and sometimes it can be much more intrusive. And you have to keep going in and turning things off. And this is sort of unprecedented with Google. They don't really make a whole lot of updates, and when they do, I feel like this is completely fair for a company.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there would be more discussion about the policy changes themselves and what we can do through the service, not through some add-on or a browser or some weird workaround, but what we can do as consumers of the service using Google themselves to actually configure it as we would like it to be configured.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I personally, I leave most of my things turned on and just clean them up on occasion. As far as, you know, the policies that Google has, I've enjoyed using their products and services, so I know they need to get paid for what they're doing. As far as, you know, across the board with, you know, the caller mentioned like Facebook making changes, I think some of what's come into play is related to Google's policy changes is their Google Plus service, which is trying to take on Facebook. They're just trying to stretch the playing field for themselves and trying to, you know, make the user experience across all their services more robust and compete with Facebook, which is basically just Facebook.
Yeah.
And Google has a lot more to offer. And it's going to continue to evolve. It'll continue to evolve based on user feedback as well. And, you know, that's the thing. If you stand by on the sidelines and choose not to do anything, then you just, you know, continue to just play as you are.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Ryan, for calling. Tim in Balsam Lake, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Peter. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. This is probably a pretty basic question, but I have Trend Micro Internet Security Suite on my computer right now. And I'm wondering if there are any freeware programs out there that would do equally as good of a job to keep me protected online. It's expiring soon, so mm-hmm. I'm kind of weighing my options.
Sure. There are a couple of ones that come to mind that you could easily check out. One is called AVG is a popular one. You could go to CNET.com, CNET.com, and do a search on probably antivirus programs, and they'll probably give you a whole slew of them. They may even give you, you know, like a bingo sheet of, you know, top to bottom. Avast, A-V-A-S-T is another one. Just keep in mind with the free ones is they talk about being free for home, non-commercial use, but they also talk about the differences between how often things might be updated or some preferences that you might have flexibility with changing in the free versus the one that you can pay for, because that's how they, you know, they're getting paid is for you to buy the one that is a paid-for service because it may offer some more flexibility as to the way you use their product. Hmm. So you just need to be aware of that.
Yep. There you go. Thanks, Tim. Dave in Deerfield, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Hi.
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a Windows XP on a notebook computer. That's a Dell Latitude one. And I tried to get, I saw on this on the site that they were, you could get some free, I was told you could get some free cleanup of your computer with these different sites. And so I went to, I think one of them was called ARO, and then it was Fast PC or something like that. And they do clean up a little bit of stuff free, but then you get, I'm getting the pop-ups from them all the time now to subscribe and pay money to subscribe for it. And I'm just an old guy using the computer just for fun sort of thing, not business, and I don't want to pay for it. How can I get these pop-ups off my, how can I erase ARO? I tried to add remove programs, and I tried to remove that PC speed up or whatever it was, and the ARO thing, it doesn't seem to work.
If you go into, click on start and then run, and then type in MSCONFIG.
MSCONFIG.
So it stands for Microsoft MS and then config.
Okay.
And then hit enter, and then look for the startup tab. There might be some checkboxes that are checked as related to the programs that you're referring to.
Okay.
If you uncheck those and then click apply and save, then it's going to ask you to reboot your system. And then when you restart, those programs that were checked off that you unchecked will no longer start up when your computer starts up.
Wonderful.
And that might be where the interference is coming from.
Yep.
And then also in your what you may want to do is in your web browser, if you've got a pop-up blocker, make sure that that wasn't turned off. It might have by them.
Yeah.
Been turned off as one of their settings. So
I'll click that back on.
Turn the pop-up browser back on again. Right?
Yeah. I think it's under tools and then options or internet options. You'll find it. You just got to poke around a little. There's a something that says pop-up blocker. You'll find it.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You can always search that too. You know, how to... If you look under help on your browser to see what version you're using, you can always do a search on the browser that you're using and what feature you're trying to use.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Good luck.
And Diane in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey.
My question has to do with a site called Spokio. I don't know if you're familiar with it or if you've ever gotten a question.
Nope.
I was doing a Google on a person, and it took me to a site called Spokio, which compiles a myriad of personal information about particular households. And just really frightening, quite frankly, a lot of it is incorrect. It tells you, you know, your activities, your political persuasion, the number of people in your family, who you're related to. It's just incredible. And I went on there because I came to find out that I was on it, my daughter was on it, and it said, here's how you remove it. So I followed their instructions on removing it. It had me in other states, so you could basically follow my paths across the United States here. And I've done it twice, and it not only didn't remove any information, it actually added more information to me. And I just wondered if you were familiar with it. It just seems to be such incredible invasion of privacy. It knows apparently who, you know, what magazines you get, so it puts in your information, and it's just really kind of frightening.
Hmm. No, I've never even heard of it.
Spokio is spelled S-P-O-K-E-O?
Right, S like Sam, P-O-K-E-O.
Yeah,
and in pulling this up, like I say, it just has, you can actually pay to get more information, but I was just Googling a relative to find them, and then this took me to the site. And then when I started putting in my name and other people's names, and I saw, you know, all of this information, you know, that, you know, I like guns and I like, you know, I'm a Republican and just all these different things. A lot of the information wasn't even correct, but just a myriad of information.
Hmm.
But the thing is, once I try to remove it, they won't remove it.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like they're might be buying keywords as an advertiser to try and become popular and create a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You know, how do you complain about something like that? Well, you can first, you know, if you really feel suspect and it's, you know, a poor choice for a website, you should probably alert Google and tell them. And they will probably, you know, research it. And
look
if they
it,
feel
yeah.
they feel that it's a valid complaint and they're hearing it from enough people, they'll probably pull it from their search engine.
There
so
you go.
That's where I would pick my demarcation line and start.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at personal computers, privacy, and other service issues with our guest Peter Green of Infostar.com. Thanks to him and thanks to you for listening in. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 if you have some questions. But Pete, usually this time of the show we go through our top 10 list. You've usually come up with some great websites.
Okay, they're not posted now, but they will be sometime later today or early this evening, hopefully if I get through the technical difficulties, but we'll go through them. The first one is called donorschoose.org, and I've seen it on the airwaves and in different places, but it's basically an online charity service that connects you to classrooms that need help. And last week they stated they had 7,800-plus donors that helped almost 150,000 students. So sounds
wow.
like a good cause. The next one has been kind of mentioned, but it needs more attention because things are changing. And it's called BISG.org, and it's the Book Industry Study Group. And basically it's about how information is shared between publishers and sellers and end users. And they have what's called BISAC, which is a Book Industry Standards and Communication, which is how you search for books, you know, the
mm-hmm.
categories that you use.
Yeah.
And they've determined how they're best categorized. So it's pretty interesting. The next one is called Lulu, LULU.com. Based on the name, you wouldn't know that it's for publishing books and book printing services, including ebooks. The next one is CustomerServiceScoreboard.com, and it's a resource for consumer rating of top 500 companies based on end user feedback. It's a pretty massive list, 500, you can imagine.
Boy.
You know, and they're all listed there. The next one is a starting point for entertainment discovery on iPhones and iPads. Across Netflix, Hulu Plus, iTunes, Crackle, PBS, and so forth. And it's called Fanhattan. FANHATTAN.com. Pretty neat site. The next one is Motor News from Europe, including auctions and technology news. And it's called EuropeanMotorNews.com. And the next one, it just, I looked at it and I've known about it for a few months and I was just like, you got to be kidding me. It's a large content sharing platform that gives you a simple and easy way to share content across the social web. It's called addthis.com, ADDTHIS.com. And talk about how many things that our web is interconnected with. Oh my God. You go to addthis.com, it's got, you know, the Facebook link, the Twitter link, link this, and it's just unbelievable how many icons there are for all the different things that you could be interlinking. The next site is for promoting nutrient-rich food choices from all five food groups and helps meals or families plan meals. It's called mealsmatter.org. Number nine is investorguide.com, and it's a resource that covers markets, stock quotes, research, personal finance, and business news. And let's not forget about nanotechnology. This next one, the last one, is a resource that covers nanotechnology and nanoscience. It includes a nano jobs page and also a searchable nanobase that lists unique nanomaterial in a database format that's searchable, 2,800 plus nanoparticles from 178 suppliers, and it's called nanowerk.com, so N-A-N-O-W-E-R-K.com. And I've got some other special links that I put up. There's a God mode link for Windows 7, which gives you easy access to changing your Windows 7 setup. So it's called God mode.
Oh, man.
And then I've got the Google privacy policy links. And then I've got some other electronic foundation links. And then I don't think I mentioned last month, but Windows Defender, Microsoft came out with what's called a Windows Defender offline beta, which allows you to basically encapsulate a, it's almost like a cleaning disk that you can create offline to run on your Windows 7 system that will eliminate if you think you have malicious programs running, so you don't have to be connected to the internet to run it. But you basically download their software, burn a disk, and then you can run it.
Yeah, and all that will be available on your...
Yep. I'll have that up hopefully sometime later today.
All right, at infostar.com. Linda in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some problems with Yahoo Mail. One is that, you know, I have no problem receiving emails, but sometimes when I either try to reply to one or just send an email, you know, compose one, it won't send. And there's, you know, there was a period not too long ago where it was like impossible for me to send one. And I looked on, you know, under the Yahoo Mail help stuff, and it said, well, maybe if you are changed to plain text instead of rich text. And I thought I did that then, made that, you know, what I was doing. And then it seemed like they were being replied or sent okay. But then now sometimes I still can't trust that I can send an email or reply to an email. And then what comes up is this box. And I haven't seen it now for a while, so I don't remember exactly what it says, but I thought it said Windows Explorer is having a problem, blah, blah, blah. And you just have to... X out of it. And
okay. So are you using Internet Explorer exclusively on your system?
Yeah.
Okay. What I would do is if it that last message part that you said where that box pops up and it's having a problem, Yahoo Mail, most people use Yahoo Mail and Google Gmail and Hotmail. They use them as web-based email systems. In other words, the email is experienced through a web browser, and you're basically using the browser to experience the email service through their servers, and you're not downloading the mail messages to your system, which is what's called a POP3 account, where you actually use something like Outlook Express or Outlook, or I think it's called Thunderbird or SeaMonkey, and there are all these other applications where you can download it to your computer. So with that being said, what I would do to troubleshoot your system is I would actually look and see how does Yahoo Mail respond to working on another browser. So what I would recommend doing, and I've talked about this on other shows, is not relying just on one browser on your system, because you, if you have more than one, so if you have something like Firefox, so to go to mozilla.org, M-O-Z-I-L-L-A.org, or you could go to, I believe, it's either www.google.com. chrome.com/chrome, or you could probably do a search on the word Chrome, but download and install another web browser, and then access your Yahoo account and test it through the other web browser, because there may be something going on where Internet Explorer either you need to update it or fix it, because it's got a conflict with working with Yahoo.
Okay.
So that would be the first action I would do, is put another browser on, log into your Yahoo account, and see if that solves the problem. If that doesn't solve the problem, then there's some setting that is not communicating with your Yahoo Mail with your computer. So you'd need to pay attention and see if you get another error message with whether you use Firefox or Chrome, you know, what that message is, and that might help take you to the next level of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
But there are the box doesn't have any solutions, and I went with my brother-in-law. It seemed like Internet Explorer was up to date.
Right. So that's why I'm saying the next thing is to try and make sure that using another browser will allow you to get into Yahoo and use it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's if you can't use Yahoo with another browser, then there's a system problem. There's some other component on your computer that's causing the interference and not the browser. And that's what you need to – it becomes a method of trying to rule out what is the cause of the problem.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Linda. Appreciate your call. So at least that's a good thing to try right off the bat. Fairly simple thing to try.
I had a problem recently, and it was very frustrating, where I had three browsers, and logging into a remote service for doing payroll, and it was a system problem and not a browser problem, because all the browsers had a problem.
Yeah.
So
that's you know, the first thing to kind of eliminate. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jane in Brookfield, hello to you.
Hi. Thank you. And I have a virtual memory problem. Every time I turn on the computer, a message pops up saying the computer is low on virtual memory and Microsoft is adding more. I have an old 2003 Dell computer, XP. Is there anything I can do, or is it about time to get a new computer?
How old? You said 2003. Do you know how much memory?
XP.
Do you know how much memory?
No. I have it on now, but it's so slow that it would take me a while to find that on my computer.
Well, the virtual memory problem it's having is it's trying to assign use of memory for the operating system and then for applications. And if it's coming up with a virtual memory problem right when you're starting, there might be some too many things trying to grab at the memory that's available. Do you have a lot of pictures or little icons in the lower right-hand corner of your screen?
No, I deleted all of those.
Okay, you got rid of all those.
Yes, I did, and I did the disk cleaner that Microsoft provides, and I even bought a fixed cleaner.
Okay.
That Fragment.
Okay.
Sure.
Do you know how full your hard drive is?
After I did the Fragmenter, it said that I had like 50%.
Okay.
Or 57%.
Okay.
Percent.
All right.
Three.
All right. Well, a couple of things you could try if you haven't done this. If you right mouse click on your recycle bin and click and click on properties and then downsize that from 10% to 1%.
Okay.
So that's one thing. And then the other is if you go into System Tools and then System Restore, you can change the configuration on System Restore and XP to, you know, using 1% of your hard drive.
1% of hard drive. Okay.
Because between the two of those, you're occupying another 20+ percent.
Okay.
And then the other thing that you might want to do is and this is all based on the fact that I don't know what the memory is and what the hard drive space is, But what Windows does is it grabs hard drive space to create a file called a page file for based on the size of the memory, the RAM in your computer, and, and the free space on your hard drive.
Right.
So if you go into, I'm trying to think of, if you right mouse click on My Computer and then click on Properties, I'm trying to think of where, but you can, you need to change your computer settings for best performance. It's under the the advanced tab. So you already did that.
I did that. I heard you a couple of weeks ago and I did that.
Okay.
All right, good.
All right.
Well, if you haven't, the trash, you haven't done that yet, that would...
Well, those last two things about the recycle bin and the restore, you know, it might help.
Okay.
But the only other thing to do is, you know, increase the size of the RAM in your computer. And memory has gotten is pretty cheap, but you'll have to do a, you know, a little research on the model of your computer and see what memory you can use to expand. And you could use Belarc Advisor, B-E-L-A-R-C, space advisor, or I believe it's S-P-E-C-C-V-Y. But there, you know, there Piriforms has software you can also download that will tell you what's in, what you have in your computer. But the best way is always to physically open it up, take the cover off, and look and see how many free slots you have available, and then do some research. You could go to Kingston.com or Crucial, C-R-U-C-I-A-L.com, and do some research in terms of the model of your computer and what kind of memory you could use to upgrade it. And you may not be able to find it locally, but you could always go online and do searches at like Office Max, Office Depot, or even eBay and see what's available for your system. You might be surprised at how inexpensive it is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Jane. Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck to you. And Susie in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. See, my husband... we've had wireless on our computer for a couple of years, and it was not secure. And so finally I demanded we get it secure or we just don't have it. Well, he tried to secure it because the charter guy told him, oh, it was super, super easy. And somehow we don't have it at all now and haven't. So
well, it's secure now.
Yeah. And so we really have been without it for a couple of weeks now.
Okay.
And we even went to buy a new, I just said, well, go buy a new Linksys thing. Mm-hmm. And the people at the store wouldn't even sell it. They said, no, it's something that you did in the computer. So I give them credit for that.
Okay.
We just don't know what we did.
All right. Well, who's the manufacturer of the one you're using now?
It is Linksys.
Okay. What you can do, you have a couple of options.
Okay.
You know, and just make sure you write down, you know, the model number and the firmware. It'll be on the back label on the router.
Okay.
You can either call Linksys and talk to them, you know, for technical support. And my experience with either Linksys, Netgear, and D-Link and so forth, you can call them up, talk to them. I don't know what their policies are, but usually within a certain period of time, they might all just have free support. But if you call them up, they'll probably have you go through and do a factory reset. And there's typically a reset, very tiny button that you push in with a paper clip or the tip of like a pencil.
Yeah, I did find that.
Yeah.
And we've done
but what
that.
What happens then is you're resetting it to factory settings. So then you need to go through and follow either their installation wizard or their instructions of how to, number one, make sure you're talking to your internet service and they have it run through, typically run through a test. And then there might be a wireless setup. And what you need to pay attention to is what do you want to call your wireless when you log into it? You know, so let's say you call it football.
Okay.
You know, you don't call it the name of your house.
Right.
Or you don't call it your last name or the name of your dog. or cat or favorite pet or whatever. You know, you give it some obscure, you know, thing.
Okay.
But something that you know what it is. Right. And then when you set up a password, don't make it so crazy that you're going to forget it. Make it something that you're going to be able to remember. And if someone comes over and you want to share it, you can say, here, this is what you need to plug in for the password. But it's something that you know. But if you don't write these things down, make it easy so you can remember it. Because if you don't remember it and you don't know how to log into it, you're not going to be able to use it.
Right,
and
right.
No one else can either.
Right, right.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And there's some just ways, you know, for example, you can take a phrase like, I played softball for the Big Ten Pub.
Mm.
So you take the first initial.
Oh.
IPSBFB10.
Sure.
What's your address, Larry?
I don't use that, but I mean it's an easy
using your wireless.
It's an easy way. I mean, and a phrase. Sometimes you just use the first letter off and cap the first one or the last letter or somewhere in there.
But just make it something easy you can use. So that,
give
to your relatives and friends, because that could be the most frustrating thing is how to log in. And I had this at work, and someone came to me and said, how do we log in our wireless? And I told them. And he said, I use that. And I said, no, you didn't, because it would work. and he did it in front of me, and it worked.
what's funny is it is saying that we've got it all set up correctly. I mean, we literally uninstalled it and then reinstalled it. But it's saying that this thing isn't connecting with our – it's saying that we don't have Internet access, and
mm-hmm.
we do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's somehow not figuring out that we – you know, we must be missing a step. But we're doing the wizard, and it's quite an easy process.
So
I wonder if he just changed something within the computer.
I would call the tech support as an option,
you've gone away.
Yeah, they're
now.
Usually good about walking you through that because they get those calls all the time.
We might have to do that. Well, I sure appreciate your time.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Yeah, well, I'm telling you, coming up with all these passwords and so forth is a real pain.
Yes, it is.
That's why I kind of like the phrase option, which I, by the way, have not used that particular phrase. But the phrase option is kind of a good one, I think, anyway.
Whatever makes it easy.
What?
for you.
Well, and how many do you have? You know, I'm trying to, I couldn't even tell you right off the top.
Too many.
I couldn't even tell you right off the top of my head how many I have. I mean, it's so many. Yeah, I have to have it almost written down somewhere.
Yeah, I had to tell one of my hockey groups to change mine because I forgot what I used.
Oh, man. Well, Pete, it's always a pleasure. You'll be back in a month or so.
When it's supposed to be warmer, but we could still get snow.
And you'll have the top 10 list up sometime, probably late today or for sure tomorrow. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.
Peter Green of Infostar.com. He'll be back in a month, and we'll do this all over again. Always a lot of fun when we have him on. Glad he's with us, and thank you again for listening in. Tomorrow at 11, we'll hear about the upcoming Canucopia event. That's the largest paddle sport expo in the whole world. And that's at 11. 11:45, we'll learn how to protect our groundwater and save some money at the same time. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.